Hello, I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop, and this is the Meet Cute Book Pod. Today we have my chat with author Kelly Farmer, whose most recent novel, It's a Fabulous Life, a sapphic retelling of the classic Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life, was released last fall from Alcove. In this episode, Kelly talks about her introduction to genre romance and her early attempts at writing a novel, the growth in traditionally published sapphic romance, what about the sports world lends itself so well to genre romance, and why hockey in particular is so popular. She also talks about learning to play hockey as an adult, where to find more romance about women athletes, what her writing process is like, and of course, she shares some books she's loved recently. Before we transition to that conversation, a little about Kelly. Kelly Farmer has been writing romance novels since junior high. While the stories have changed, one theme remains the same. Everyone deserves to have a happy ending. She loves telling tales with a touch of snark and a lot of heart. When not writing, she enjoys being outside in nature, quoting from 80s movies, listening to music, and petting every dog she comes in contact with. Kelly lives in the Chicago area, where she swears every winter is her last one there. And now, through the magic of podcasting, here's my conversation with Kelly. Can we start by talking a little bit about your like romance reading background? Do you remember when you picked up your first romance novel?
I was very lucky to grow up in the 80s for many reasons. Being a child of the 80s was awesome, as we would have said in the 80s. And we had Sweet Valley Highs. So I was reading those in like middle school and junior high, probably too young to be reading them. And then there was also this historical romance geared towards teen girls called Sunfire romances.
Oh.
Yeah. And those were like, they all took place during like a major historical event in, I think it's US history mostly. So, you know, it was like the Titanic or Heading Out West. And there was always like the teen girl. And then she always had like two loves that she had to choose between.
A series of love triangles, just an entire imprint, just love triangles across the board.
Yeah. And so funny enough, like the very first manuscript that I like started and finished was like a love triangle where she had to choose between two men. Because of course, that's what I would have written.
Yeah, it was like imprinted in your brain. All right. So you've been reading romance forever, basically. When did you start writing?
I, of course, because I was reading these amazing books, you know, young me thought surely I could also write them. So I started writing just, they're hysterically terrible teen romances when I was like, you know, in fifth grade. And they, I still have like a box of them because I would handwrite them in a spiral notebook.
Aww.
And they're so hysterically funny. Like if I'm having like a low point in my writing or whatever, I will actually read them just to be entertained.
I would watch like a TikTok series of like snippets from the fifth grade journals.
They're terrible, but wonderful. And then when I was in my early 20s, I think is when I like actually decided to sit down and write a book as an adult. Like, I'm not just going to write the scenes I want to write. I'm going to start it. I'm going to finish it. It took a very long time. It's a very long historical romance that will probably never see the light of day. But I realized writing that I had a contemporary voice. My second manuscript was a contemporary. And it was like, oh, yeah, this is where it's at.
So the books that you've published so far, three of them are sapphic sports romances, which we love to see. I have so many questions about all of the things in that sentence. Can we start by talking about sapphic romance, which is like a romance between two women, and the evolution of the market in sapphic romance in the last like 5 years? What has your experience with that been as a person who's been writing it?
So my books are the Out on the Ice series. It takes place in the wonderful world of women's hockey. And as far as the traditional publishing world, yeah, you're absolutely right. The traditional publishing works at the speed of mud. So they took a long time to catch on, like, hey, there's readership for books with two women falling in love with each other. And, you know, we have to give a massive shout out to a number of smaller presses who have been doing the work for many, many years. That's like Ilva Publishing, Bella Books, Bold Strokes Books. They have been putting out sapphic romances for a very long time. And certainly indie authors have been doing wonderfully, putting out amazing stories. So yeah, it's been around for a long time. Traditional publishing is picking up on it. And it's exciting to see every year there are more titles and more diverse titles.
Has traditional publishing started to like respond differently to you as somebody who writes sapphic romances? Has that been, because I've seen, like, from the perspective of a bookseller, I mean, we opened less than two years ago. And in that time, I think the number of traditionally published sapphic romances in our store has maybe doubled. Like, we had as many as we could find, and now there are so many more. Like, the number coming out this year is maybe as many as we had entirely before, which is great, but feels very sudden and also way late in the game. Like, it's 2024. It's wild that this is a thing that is only now starting to really happen.
This is one of my personal theories. Everyone's mileage varies, but I think a lot of it is sort of reflective of society as a whole. Because if you look at like media in general, the first thing you always get is male, and it's white male, like always. And then it's like, okay, we'll tippy toe into this, like interracial male, or the, and then it's like, okay, now we'll go to white female. And, you know, then we'll tippy toe into more diverse female. And, you know, then we'll tippy toe into trans romance. And so it's, I just think that's just kind of how it's been with media in general.
I do actually think we're getting more traditionally published romance with trans main characters as well. Like, not as many as sapphic, but it does feel like an uptick a little bit.
Yeah, it's sort of the same thing where like every year you see more, we're seeing a lot of non-binary leads and, you know, asexual leads. And it's all very exciting to see.
So sports romance generally is having a real moment in romance right now. Romance is famously a very trendy genre in that it has all of these sort of micro trends of different tropes and different settings that get really popular for a while. They sort of like rise and fall, which I think does have a lot to do with the speed of indie publishing, you know, and traditional publishing just sort of tries to keep up. But sports is the thing at the moment. What is it about the sports world that makes such a great setting for a romance novel?
For romances, you know, we love our series. We love a world that can just keep going. And team sports in particular just provide you like an instant pool of people who can fall in love, sometimes with each other. But I think that's a really nice appeal to both authors and readers is like, hey, I've got this sports team full of all these people. And since it's a sports team, you do see them coming in and out of stories so that, you know, and inevitably every author has that one side character who just like waltzes into the story like, so, hey, I'm here. I'm going to want my own story someday. Thanks.
And it's wild because you just have a sports team and crazy. They're all single.
You know, I mean, it's magical. It's like all, you know, the five brothers who are also all single.
Yeah. Like a classic historical like Bridgerton situation, right? Where you have, it's set around a family. Sports is just the family is the team.
Yeah. It's, and you know, and sports teams have a definite family dynamic. And also, like, especially if you're writing any kind of queer romance, having teammates falling in love with each other always has that added element of
Right. Forts proximity, high stakes. What happens if it doesn't work out?
Does one of us have to demand a trade?
You have an enemies to lovers contemporary, which is a sports romance. And I think that might be another big appeal of sports as a contemporary setting, because it's very hard to find a contemporary setting where you have enemies, like real enemies, right? Like in a fantasy novel, they can just, there's like a million ways you could have an enemy. But in the real world, I don't have enemies. But in sports, you do. You have like an opposing team. You could have had a bad experience in a past game or whatever. And then you could have like an actual setup where people hate each other. And then like there's so many ways to make them have to spend time together, which I do think sports is giving you a good structure for what is a very popular trope.
Yeah, that was the inspiration for Unexpected Goals, which is the Team USA, Team Canada rivalries, because that is one of the fiercest rivalries in all of hockey, because they play each other so much. But there's also, but like all the players also know each other really well outside of like international competition. They work together, they coach together, they've gone to college together quite frequently. So it's a really funny dynamic in a way where like a lot of them have fallen in love and married each other and started families, and it's the cutest thing ever. But it's like, okay, honey, love you, bye. I have to go be your opponent now, you know, and try to kick your butt.
Yeah, it is in a very sort of insular world in a way that also I think really lends itself to complicated, messy storylines, which is fun for romance. You know, if there aren't that many people that play high-level women's hockey, there aren't that many places to play high-level women's hockey, and you get traded and you move. And so you a world where everyone like has at least sort of an opinion about everybody else is fun to play with, I assume, as a writer.
Yes. Yes, it is so much fun because, yeah, like you said, it's not a big world and everybody knows everybody. So that was a lot of fun to write just over those three books.
Yeah. Well, and they can't escape each other, right? I mean, there's no, like, if you date someone in your friend group and it goes poorly, that's a problem, but you don't have to hang out with that friend group all the time afterwards. Whereas, like, if you date your teammate and it goes poorly, like, you're still on the same team.
And it's like a workplace romance too, in a lot of ways, where, you know, if you,
yeah,
same thing, if you have a workplace romance and it goes south, you know, and sports romance is also, you know, doesn't it just have to be the athletes? It can also be coaches, people who work in the front office, trainers, those peripheral jobs too, is like, I can't get involved with a player. I will lose my job.
Right. Which is giving you workplace romance, but maybe with less troubling power dynamics than like a boss employee situation. Like front office player is like, they shouldn't date, but I'm not like wicked out the whole time because I'm like, this is a bad idea. Like you're making bad choices.
Like in a lot of things for romance reasons, it's okay.
It's fine. Yeah, it's totally fine. HR cleared this one. I love a good sports romance. And hockey in particular is really popular in romance right now. Baseball is about to have a moment, I think, but right now it's hockey. I am not a hockey person. I went to one hockey game on a date one time. Could you explain to me why hockey is fun? Because I think it looks dangerous and kind of scary.
The deadly blades on their feet?
Yeah, I'm like worried about them.
You know, at its core, like if you just like look at the pure sport of hockey, it's so much fun. It's basically combine all aspects of other sports, but then also make them ice skate while doing it. And it's very challenging. I learned how to play it as an adult because that's what you do when you turn 30 and kind of have like a tri-life crisis.
What was that experience like? How did you, like, where did you go for that?
They actually had classes at a local ice rink. And I can ice skate. Like I could always ice skate pretty well. I actually took some like ice skating classes just to like, I want to learn how to skate backwards. That was my goal. And then I was like, I'm going to learn how to play hockey. I had also played floor hockey in adulthood.
What is floor hockey though?
It's like hockey played on a gym floor. You use an actual hockey stick and a ball. And it's like the same thing. Like you run around a gym floor and you try to score with the ball instead of a puck.
Okay. So it's like indoors field hockey.
Yeah.
I'm realizing now that I do know something about hockey because I did play several years of field hockey, which I apparently completely blocked out until this moment. And to be fair, I was always worried about all of us in field hockey too, because when you aren't good at it, there's a rule that the ball is not supposed to go above like waist height, I think. Because those things are hard. And they can do damage. But if you're all very bad at it, you're also very bad at obeying the rule that the ball is not supposed to go above waist height. And I was just, you know, there's like no padding. Ice hockey, at least people have things on their bodies. Like field hockey is like you wear shin guards.
I think they started wearing goggles at some point.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
I think they wear them now. Like when I was in high school, they definitely did not. I know that. But yeah, they wore like plaid skirts.
Yeah, tiny plaid skirts. Horrifying. So how has playing ice hockey as an adult been?
It's super challenging, but like so much fun. I mean, especially I was playing with like adults who, you know, were doing it for fun. Nobody has delusions of grandeur here.
Did it help your writing to have experienced attempting to play ice hockey?
That was part of why I did it was, this was a long time ago when I was writing like other hockey books that, that again, will probably never see the light of day. But it did help in a way just to sort of like the feel, the sights, the sounds, the smells, especially the smells, because the equipment smells horrific. What the equipment even feels like, you know, just getting strapped into your, like, and the order of things you have to put on. Like, it's just, it's kind of those little things.
Do you have any theories about why, I mean, perhaps the algorithm is the answer? You know, sometimes things get buzzy and no one will ever figure it out. But do you have a guess as to what about hockey romance is like making it the sport of romance, you know, right now?
I think there's a few reasons. I think the biggest one, and it's also the biggest elephant in the room, is that hockey is a very white sport. And I think we just need to acknowledge that. That like Romancelandia, we love you, but there, we've had some problems and continue to have some problems. You know, hockey, it's certainly, I mean, like everything, it has certainly gotten more diverse over the years. This is definitely an instance where Romancelandia, we could be doing a little better here, featuring some other sports that have much more diversity and making sure that when you're writing those, you're writing the, you know, the makeup of that sport. Another thing I've really noticed is that the readership for hockey romances is so voracious and so dedicated, and particularly male-male hockey romances. Those are the most rabid readers and fans of their stories I have ever seen. And so I think if you are an author or a publisher looking to write something that you already know has a very strong established readership, that's a big one. And so I think it's maybe a little bit like one feeds the other. There's a strong readership, so you write more. And because there's more readership.
I had a hockey romance moment. Like, I'm very uncool. So I had this hockey romance moment like way before hockey romance was having a moment. But again, as a person who like didn't remember that I played field hockey until 5 minutes ago, I had to like learn the sport of hockey from what I was getting from the books, or like learn enough of it to follow what was happening. And so I wonder if there's also sort of an inertia to like, this is the sport I know now. Like, I understand how this one works, or at least I understand how like the romance version of this sport works. And so I'm going to keep reading this sport instead of having to learn like a different, like, I don't know how football works. Like, I don't know. Someone would have to tell me how football works first, right? Or I'd have to like learn it again, which is almost like the barrier to entry people sometimes feel like they have to historical romance.
That's true too. I think that's a great point, that if you're just looking to read and have a pleasant afternoon and you don't want to be confused or be like, wait, I don't know what's going on. Like, I'll just keep reading this. And again, there's so much hockey romance out there that like, I'll find what I'm looking for.
So for somebody who wants to read more romance about women in sports, because a lot of sports romance is about men who are athletes. So if I want to read more sports romance about women athletes, like where do I go after reading the Out on the Ice series?
I will recommend one author, Rachel Spangler, who has several, like a bunch, actually a bunch of sports romances that are women loving women stories. And they're all different sports. And they're not like, quote, traditional, like romancey sports. Like there's a fencing book. There's a curling romance. So yeah, I think there's a snowboarder romance, I believe. So I would say check out Rachel Spangler just if you want to read women athletes falling in love with each other. E.J. Noyes is another one who writes skiing romances. Yes. Gold is phenomenal. It's one of my favorite books. So yes, Gold by E.J. Noyes. Yeah, I learned a lot about skiing reading that book.
It's one of those sports. It's one of those like Olympic sports where I have seen only people who are very good at it participate in it. That would be a really interesting one to have to like get in the perspective of the athlete and like what it really takes to be a good skier. There's also, I haven't read this one yet because the advanced copy just showed up like yesterday. But I remember somebody mentioning it like a year ago. And I was like, I need more information about this. It's a sapphic bowling romance. It's called 7-10 Split by Carmen Lee. Both of the main characters are Black. And I am like really excited to learn a lot more about bowling.
I'm so excited. Actually, I think it was just this morning Carmen posted on social media that it's on NetGalley now. So just FYI.
Now is the time if you have NetGalley access. Yeah. Bowling is one where I'm just like, you don't write a bowling romance unless you yourself know and love bowling. Like you don't just end up at bowling, right? Like some people maybe like are writing hockey romances because they're trendy. No one's writing a bowling romance because bowling is trendy, which means we're going to get like the real bowling experience, which I'm very excited about.
And one more I'll mention, it's not coming out till November, but I know if you want like more hockey romance goodness, it's Wake Up Nat and Darcy by Kate Cochran. And that is like former enemies for, again, it's another Team USA, Team Canada. They're former enemies and they have to work together on a reality show.
Incredible. Sold. Done. Making a mental note for November, which is a great time for a hockey romance because it's cold, yeah. You know?
It's tis the season.
Still seasonal. Yeah. But yeah, that's that lead up time in traditional publishing. Like that book doesn't come out for so long. And now we just have to wait and build up our anticipation.
It's pining, you know, it's like romance pining.
It is. It's built into the genre, the pining, yes. So thoroughly that it's like part of the experience of reading.
Actually, another thing I would recommend is if you go to the website for iHeart Sapphic, which is iHeartSapphic.com, they have this phenomenal book finder feature. And it's great for like everything. If you're looking to find a specific kind of book, if you want to read like a certain trope, a certain romantic pairing, a heat level. But one of their searchy thingies is sports. And so you can go there and find like, you can just like look at all the covers and then be like, ooh, tennis, ooh, boxing, ooh, like, so yeah, I would very much recommend that if you want to find like what sports romances are out there with two women as the main characters.
All right, enough about sports, possibly the most unexpected lengthy topic on a romance podcast that we've ever had is just like 30 minutes on sports. But let's talk about writing. What is your writing process like as somebody who has been writing for so long? Do you have it down to a science? Is it still chaos?
I have a good now. I finish books now, which junior high Kelly could not say. basically, my favorite thing in the world is when a plot bunny hops into my head. I'm kind of an idea machine, and like literally anything can make me go, oh, that would make a great story. And, you know, 90% of them never make it past that. But I just love that, like playing the what if game, like, oh, and then like, what if this happens? And, oh, what if the other main character was this? And, oh, what if? And then this happens and then this happens. And before I know it, like I have a whole story, a sketchy story where, you know, things happen in between. Once I've sort of like committed to something where it went beyond the like, that would be fun to, oh, there's an actual story here. I spend a lot of like time brainstorming and doing pre-work. And I get to know my main characters very well. So I have my like the same, I've done this for, I don't know how many books, but it's like the same thing I do for every book where, you know, I learn their astrological sign and.
That's extremely gay. I love that.
You know, right. I handwrite it because, well, I mean, they have to be, you know, astrologically compatible or this just will never work.
Yeah, sure.
And then I do a thing where, like, I write out their from their point of view, their past, where they are now, and like where they imagine their future, or where they'd like their future to go. And it helps me start to hear their voice, so that like when I actually write the manuscript, I it's still a little like I have to find you, but it's like I sort of know what your voice sounds like now. Yeah, and I'm not like a super plotter, but I try to have like a fairly set outline of like, these are the things that have to happen. If you're a writer out there, I highly recommend Romancing the Beat by Gwen Hayes. The fantastic, easy read book that keeps you on task. If you're a romance writer, it kind of just helps you hit like those important beats.
How do you figure out if you have fun ideas all the time? How do you figure out which of the ideas have enough in them to become like a 300-page novel and which of them are like, what a fun thought?
I think sometimes the ones that flutter in and out or what I'm like, oh, like, yeah, whatever. But sometimes it's, you know what, it's funny. It's usually something like I'll be just kind of playing with it in my head and then I will go, something will click and I will burst out laughing. And if I burst out laughing, like that's a good sign. That definitely happened with It's a Fabulous Life. That's my sapphic, It's a Wonderful Life retelling. Yeah, just imagining this It's a Wonderful Life retelling, I was laughing to myself so hard that it was like, yeah, this has to be written. Like, this is a go.
It had substance to it.
Yeah, it has substance. And I can actually like, and it's also like when I can see a story where it's not just like, oh, a cute idea, but it's like, oh, I actually see like there's a middle and this is how it would end. Yeah, sometimes if I can't see the story, it's just a cute idea that lives in my head.
Which of your books so far was like, the fastest, like the easiest to write, and which one was giving you trouble?
The easiest one to write was actually of my published books, was It's a Fabulous Life. You know, I wrote that book at a time when like I and the world just needed something light and happy and joyful where nothing truly bad happens. And for me, I just needed like, I needed something to bring me joy. Like I wanted to go to that world when I was writing, you know, like I just want to go to this, like this cute small town. That's awesome. They're obsessed with their Winter Wonderfest. Like that's where I want to live right now. So it flowed really, really easily, which was lovely. Because the hardest published book that I ever wrote was Calling the Shots, which is the third book in the Out in the Ice series. And that was the one I wrote before It's a Fabulous Life. So that's also, I think, why It's a Fabulous Life felt so great. Yeah, Calling the Shots was just, it was hard. It was a hard book to write. I had like so many false starts. Usually like writing a book, like the starting them is not a problem. Like I got the start. I hit a wall at a certain point, but it's not the beginning. I think I wrote the beginning of that book four or five times. It was, I think part of the problem was it lived with me for a lot of years. My debut novel was Out on the Ice, but that book was on submission for a long time. And like when a book's on submission, the thing they always say is write something else. And so since I didn't know if that book was going to sell, I didn't want to write something that would like have to be connected. So I started writing Calling the Shots, just like, it could be a standalone. It could be a part of the series. So it kind of had no direction when I started writing it. And then like, once I actually realized it was book three in a series, then it just, it was like, where am I going to start you? And like, it's just, it was just a hard book. It was hard to edit. I don't know. Like, it just, like everything about it was hard, but it's also my favorite book in the series. So I think it was worth it.
That's interesting. I feel like I hear that a lot where something was really tough and either the response is like, I never want to look at this again and I'm pretending it doesn't exist, or like I ended up really loving it in the end.
Yeah. And what's funny is I think the Tierney and Regan are the main characters of that one. Though they lived with me for so long. They still live with me. Like, they still are in my head as though I'm still telling their story. And sometimes I'm like, you guys, I wrote your story. And they're kind of like, yeah, but our story is still going.
That's funny. You just have like fan fiction in your head of them.
I'm writing my own fanfic in my head of these two knuckleheads that won't leave me alone.
Do you have any tropes that you haven't had a chance to play with that you are like really wanting to sink your teeth into?
I have not written a fake dating book.
A modern classic.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just kind of, it's a bit like what we were saying earlier of how, like, you know, for romance reasons, that, you know, I'd say like 80% of fake dating reasons are like, that would never happen in real life. But like, but also in a book, I'm like, yeah, you have to find a date for that. So I think that would be fun. If I ever decided to write another book in the Out on the Ice series, it would be a fake dating book. I have that one like plotted in my head. So that would be a fake dating book.
I feel like sports gives you, as with apparently many tropes, like I feel like you could find like a slightly more plausible sports reason for fake dating. Like if you tell me that it's for publicity, I'll believe you.
This one would be teammates pretending that they're dating just so their other teammates will like stop trying to set them up with people.
I mean, I've never been on a hockey team. It sounds like that would be annoying and I would need to find a solution. And obviously the solution isn't to tell people to please stop trying to set you up. It's to fake date your teammate.
Exactly. I mean, the answer is so obvious.
It's so obvious. All right. Well, speaking of things you may in the future, right? What is up next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, I can I excitedly share. I know in 2024, all three Out on the Ice series books are coming out in audiobook, which, yay, I'm super, super, super excited about. the contract's not signed yet, so I can't give like specifics.
You heard it here first. It's a secret.
I believe they're all coming out in 2024.
That's great for us, like, must listen to book while doing chores, people.
Thank goodness for audiobooks.
Honestly, I would never fold laundry.
And I'm in submission land right now. Mm. So I wish I had more concrete things to say. I'm currently working on a sapphic retelling of the movie Elf.
Another modern classic.
That's my thing. After writing and It's a Wonderful Life retelling, I was like, I mean, Elf is right here, just begging to be retold.
I've often said.
Yes.
Not enough Elf retellings in the romance world.
Not enough. See, I'm working on that right now. It's just fun. It's just fun. and I also have the book of my heart, of the series of my heart. It's called A Sense of Time. It's a time travel world. It's not strictly a romance, but there is a central romance in it. So that's also on submission. So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. I feel like time, like playing with time, is also having a moment. Like the number of time loop books that have appeared in the last 12 months is wild. So I feel good about that for you.
Sending it out into the universe. Yeah, the main pitch of it is the female main character is a psychic with a secret government time travel agency.
Sold. We'll read.
It's a little bit, I used to say it was genre less, and now I say it's genre full.
It's genre full. It's all of them.
It's genre full. It's all genres, you know. So yes, if you would say, is it a mystery? Is it a romance? Is it a sci-fi? I'll just say yes. It is all this and more.
I hope that appears as an advanced reader copy soon in my Edelweiss and or on a NetGalley near you. Well, before I let you go, could you recommend a book or two that you have read recently and really loved?
I sure can. Love recommending books. Two came out last year. Sorry, Bro by Talin Voskuni. I gobbled this book up deliciously. The author has just a really, really engaging voice, like super fun. And it also takes place in the Armenian culture, which I really didn't know much about. And I learned so much reading this book. And also the food and the coffee, like, will make you crave all the food and all the coffee. I know that she has another book coming out in May called Lavash at First Sight, which is like all about food. So I'm in trouble reading that one. That was just a lot of fun. Recommend for fun. I also really enjoyed Three Holidays and a Wedding by Usma Jalaluddin and Marissa Stapley. I apologize to all these authors if I've mispronounced your name. That was just so cozy and fun, and just like, it was like a perfect Christmas time read. It was a really nice story. The main story takes place in the year 2000, when Christmas, Hanukkah, and Ramadan all were at the exact same time. And it's a nice world and story about like seeing what we have in common rather than like all our differences. And right now I'm reading an oldie but goodie, The Duke Heist by Erica Ridley. This is the first book in the Wild Winchester series, because I read The Perks of Loving a Wallflower when it came out, because that's the sapphic romance in the series. And then, of course, like the second I finished it, I bought The Duke Heist. And I'm kind of on a historical kick right now. And I was like, what book has been sitting on my TBR for like way too long? And The Duke Heist came up. So it's super fun. And that's just a really fun, fun world. It's like Regency romp of like, it's a bunch of adopted siblings who are like accepted into society, but very begrudgingly because they are, you know, the street urchins. Oh, the horror. And they all, like, every sibling has their own, like, very specific skill that they have. And they're so much fun. I'm enjoying that a lot.
Yeah, those are delightful. Well, thank you so much. This has been fun. I am not going to go learn how to play hockey, but I feel like I should think about picking up a hobby that won't result in physical injury to me. My hobby actually that I decided for this year is I'm going to get into women's soccer watching. I'm going to get into watching women's soccer. This is my like 2024 hobby choice. So was it because of Meryl Wilsner?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Possibly. Not no. Certainly not. Not no.
Yes, that is a very strong possibility. But, well, you know, it's funny because I write about women's professional hockey and a lot of people said I didn't even know that existed. And so it's like, I've heard from a couple of readers, like, I actually got interested in women's hockey because like, oh, it's a thing. I want to get more into it. So that's pretty cool when you actually can like tell people like this thing exists.
Yeah. You too could care about it.
Yes.
It's fun.
It is fun.
Maybe that's really the PR angle they're missing. I think that the Women's Professional Hockey League should like look into partnership deals with romance authors.
I'm right here. Website has contact information on it.
All right. Well, I hope that pans out for you because I feel like then like really this podcast will have done its job.
And there you have it. A huge thank you to Kelly Farmer for chatting sapphics and hockey. If this conversation has made you want to pick up a copy of It's a Fabulous Life, you can do that in our shop or on our website, meetcutebookshop.com. We've also got lots of books about women athletes, so many that we curated a list. You can find that list by hovering over our book lists drop-down menu and clicking on Book Recs by Theme. My most recent favorite is Anita Kelly's How You Get the Girl, which is about a high school basketball coach who winds up coaching alongside her childhood idol. It is, not coincidentally, our queer romance book club pick for April. Finally, if you've been enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review it on the podcast listening platform of your choosing. That helps other people find us, and that helps us keep making podcasts. That's all for this episode of the Meet Cute Book Pod. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop in San Diego, California, and I hope you'll tune back in for more deep dives into romance writing, reading, and publishing.